Unlock big savings and add style and security to your home with high-quality Schlage door locks from Menards. Whether you're looking for a traditional interior lock or a Wi-Fi-compatible electronic lock, Menards has you covered. With more than 200 options of Schlage door locks in stock, save big on all door locks. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk. I'm your host Damian Abraham, and today on the show, one of my oldest buddies, well, not one of my oldest buddies, but I've known him for a really long time, Fast Ronald. I've known him so long, he used to be RJ when I knew him way back when, a hilarious comedian, a great rapper back before this, and someone I've been friends with and had some of my wildest misadventures with ever. This is a fun episode, a lot of good memories brought up, and some sad ones too, but we'll talk about that in one second. RJ's got a brand new hilarious comedy special that you can watch right now for free. Ronald. Gotta stop doing that. Ronald has a brand new comedy special that you can check out right now on YouTube for free called Flex Your Head. He is a deep punk rock hardcore kid with an incredible record collection. Got some stuff that I really want. As I said off the top, someone that I've had a lot of great times with, a lot of fun times, but in the last few years, sadly, we've shared a lot of loss, and we talk about that a little bit here. This was an episode that after I recorded brought up a lot of emotion. There's some real sad stuff that we kind of talk about and touch on, and losing some people. So before we go any further, I just want to say rest in peace Tim Butcher, rest in peace Wade Allison, rest in peace Riley Gale, and last but certainly not least, rest in peace to Chris Mathis, a.k.a. BC. Miss you guys a lot, and a lot of people miss him, as does Ronald, as we'll hear in this episode. But we do talk a lot about good times, too, and about how we live on in the memory of our friends, and we go on through their inspiration, and we carry them with us for the rest of our lives. And it's sad that they're not here, but it's good that we're here together to kind of tell the stories and spin the yarns and spread the legends of these people. So once again, please go out and check out Fast Ronald if you are able to when he performs comedy. If you see him in your area, he performs a lot in Austin, of course. And check out this special on YouTube, Flex Your Head, live from Austin, Texas. And you can find that on Fast Ronald's YouTube page. There'll be links in the description as well. Well, I'm not going to ramble on anymore. If you want to get in touch with this podcast, hit up turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. That is run by my brother, who's the show producer and normally guest booker extraordinaire. Thank you, Tristan, for all the hard work you do. You can find me on Instagram, @LeftForDamian. There's YouTube pages and TikTok pages and all that kind of stuff for this podcast. So find those at turnedoutapunk on those platforms, Instagram as well, and all that stuff. But that's it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Fast Ronald on Turned Out a Punk. RJ, thank you so much for coming on the show.
And thanks for having me.
I should have actually checked first. Is it Ronald or RJ is like what's preferred?
Man, I feel like people that known me the longest call me RJ. Very few people that I meet nowadays and very few people still call me RJ, but most people call me Ronald now, but I'll still answer to RJ, to my mom, to a lot of family, old friends.
Well, I feel like definitely not as long as your mom, but I feel like I've known you a very long time. I was like trying to figure out how old you would have been the first time I met you, which would probably be like maybe before that first Ricky Fest.
Yeah.
Iron Age tour we did before that.
I think I had to have been 19, maybe 19 or 20, maybe.
Man, just a kid. And well, yeah. Now, and I feel like we grew up together, so this will be a fun conversation.
Yeah, man, it's been a long time.
Well, I got to start off the way they all start off, which is, Ronald, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across it?
Yeah, so The very first time I heard what's considered punk, I was young, but not enough to really understand what it was. It was on a road trip with my family. My stepdad's brother lives in Florida. And I was 10 or 11. We took a road trip to Florida. And right before we left, we went to this American chain store called CD Exchange. And it's just used CDs, right, for really cheap. So my stepdad went, grabbed a giant pile of CDs. And I remember listening to two bands for the first time that completely changed my perspective of music and even understanding music. Up to that point, I had just listened to whatever my stepdad would listen to. And he's a classic 80s rocker, just denim jacket, long hair, burnout, and just loves rock and roll. So it was the first time I ever listened to the Beatles, and I heard the entire progression of the band, and it blew my mind away that one band can sound so many different ways. And then it was the first time I ever heard the Ramones. He got Ramones Mania and listened to it. You know, we just listened to this pile of CDs there, all the way there, all the way back. And that was the first time that I heard the Ramones. I didn't know that that was punk. I just remember listening to the songs and being so catchy. And I remember as a kid thinking, wow, this is just as catchy as the Beatles was, because we listened to the Beatles first. And then it wasn't until years later, and I was a teenager, maybe like 14 or 15, that I started actually discovering it for myself. At the time, I was listening to just a lot of classic rock, a lot of nu metal. My stepdad would take me to every classic rock show that would come to town, because my mom hated going to concerts, and he was so young, and he was just a rocker, man. So I went and I saw, I mean, everyone, dude, from Scorpions, Iron Maiden, just Rush, like every classic rock band possible. But as a teenager, I wanted something different, and so I listened to nu metal because it was accessible, but it was boring. It started getting really boring to me at a certain point. And I remember in my high school, there was this little section that was the freelance rocker section. It's where like everybody would hang out that was a rocker. And then somehow the rave kids also got thrown into that mix. So it was just this little group, right? And I remember seeing this kid that rode my bus, and he would have different band shirts that I wouldn't recognize. And one day I was like, man, I'm going to ask him what kind of music this is. So I asked him, I was like, yo, man, what kind of music is this? And I'm pretty sure he was wearing like an American Nightmare shirt or something. And he was like, oh, this is hardcore. You should come to a show with me. And I was like, all right, cool. So a few days later, he took me to the show at a tire shop. And it was what became Bitter End, and then some metalcore bands, just like a mix, you know, just of like hardcore and metalcore. And it just sparked my interest. I saw people like slam dancing. I saw people moshing. It was in a fucking tire shop. It was ex dangerous as fuck. Just one of the homies' uncles would let people throw shows at this tire shop. So there was all the equipment everywhere, cars. It was fucking crazy. And I was like, dude, what the fuck? This is like a Thursday night, you know? And I got hooked from there, man. I started diving into hardcore, started hanging out with some people. My friend's brother was older. He was a skinhead. He started showing me a bunch of Oi, started giving me his old punk and his old hardcore CDs, old New York hardcore stuff. And that's when the internet just started getting popular, man. So it was easy just to deep dive, then, you know, get CDs or get records and look at the back, look up bands that I would read there, and just kind of did deep dives as much as I could when I could. And then I was in San Antonio, then moving to Austin as a teenager, 18. It was just, you know, dude, everyone that ended up booking, like Timmy was there. He was already booking shows. And back then, all my friends would go to hardcore and punk shows. So I would go to both with them. And it was the perfect time to be young in a city where they had a great scene for music in general.
Yeah, like it was it like looking back on it now, it was such a cool moment to have lived through. Like, and Austin now obviously is not the same, but like at that point, Austin was such a fucking amazing city. Like, just to be there sometimes hanging out for like Timmy Fest or later for South by Southwest. Like it was such a crazy wild. You
Yeah,
guys,
man.
you, I say it, you guys were the hardest partying hardcore scene I'd ever seen.
Yeah, it was surreal sometimes. When I think about nights that I've witnessed or nights I've been a part of, just yeah, it was the perfect city to be young in and just have access to music and friends, man. It was a crazy time to be young.
What was the pre-Bitter End band called?
Today we prevail.
Oh, was it kind of the same sort of sound as like it? Obviously, Bitter End would be better, I guess, but like,
Yeah, it was pretty much the same sound.
I love that, like, that Bitter End and Iron Age, I guess, around the same time. I guess Bitter End maybe slightly before are both kind of doing this sound, and like Power Trip would ultimately do this sound that's almost like Texas metalcore, but like not in this terrible sense of metalcore that it's been taken up as, but like it was like a true crossover of metal influences into hardcore. Like it sounded like Metallica covering the Cro-Mags or something.
Yeah, definitely. It was definitely a heavier sound, and I think some of that might be influenced because San Antonio, where both bands are from, is a really big metal city. At one point in the 80s, it was called the metal capital of the world, and it's actually where Slayer had a concert with San Antonio Slayer. It's like a battle of the bands for who was going to use the name Slayer happened in San Antonio.
I didn't know about this. What's San Antonio Slayer's deal?
It was just like a same kind of sound, like thrashy, like early 80s, but they were called Slayer. Then Slayer came out, so they started calling themselves San Antonio Slayer. And then they had a battle of the bands for who was going to use the name. And I want to say, dude, they had a crazy host for the show too. I could be wrong, but I want to say it was like someone like King Diamond or something like that hosted the show. Someone wild. You know, it was a people wear shirts of the Flyer. In San Antonio and shit. Like, you'll see old heads wearing shirts that have the flyer on it and shit.
That's awesome. Was Devastation from San Antonio?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, yeah, because I remember Riley hooked up with those guys later on and got like that's where he got the shirts from, I guess, and everything.
Yeah.
So I love that Devastation LP.
Yeah, shit's good.
Oh, it's so
Really.
sick. And that's I guess the thing like I didn't realize too is like I guess there's Pantera, but there's like lots of Texas metal, like real heavy stuff, like so all over Texas there was like crazy metal and crazy punk too.
Yeah, and a lot of time, man, when I was going to shows, when I started going to shows as a teenager, it would be a lot of mix of bands because there wasn't a lot of venues in San Antonio. So I feel like San Antonio has a had a really heavier had a really heavier influence.
Yeah. So going back to like when you moved to Austin, was that before, I guess just before Iron Age kind of forms?
That was right in the beginning. I think they were already practicing, but I don't think they were playing shows. Or if they were playing shows, it was the very beginning. Because I remember the first show in San Antonio. I just can't remember if I was still living there or if I was already in Austin coming back.
What was Tarpey's band before? He had a band, right? Like a youth crew kind of band.
Yeah, they were called Far From Breaking.
Yeah, because Far From Breaking came up here and had some like crazy fight break out of the show.
Yeah,
And like beat the crap out of some kid in Toronto.
when I that's what when I first started going to shows, it was the end of Far From Breaking. I remember their last show was with Honor, and I can't remember who else, but I just remember with Honor playing because I was straight edge at the time, so I was like really into the whole lineup was pretty much a straight edge lineup. But yeah, I remember that ended, and Iron Age, it wasn't too far behind.
It's so crazy. Like, I didn't really know Tarpey or any of the dudes at that point in Far From Breaking. So, for me, it's insane to think of you guys as being like a straight edge scene. Like, just.
Yeah, I remember being a kid, and Tarby's only like a year or two older than me, but you know, when you're young, that's a world of difference. And I
Totally.
just remember being like so influenced by the music that I just like, that was like my idol. So I just remember when I moved to Austin and I would get to hang out with him, and still I was still straight edge and just still, living by the rules, man. It was funny because so was he. And then now we fast forward and like, yeah, man, time really changes.
Yeah, like, was he straight edge at all in Iron Age? Because I kind of remember him breaking, and there was like an interview with Iron Age in Montreal, and he was
I
talking
don't
about weed
remember
in it.
specifically. Yeah, I can't remember specifically if he was still straight edge when Iron Age started or when they were playing shows.
Because I met Wade was the first guy I kind of met from everything when he was on tour with Desperate Measures.
Yeah.
And I
We used to
remember.
like tie he used to like tie the shirt around his head so you couldn't see his face.
Yeah. And he's just standing. I remember watching them play and, like, they're doing everything like a band back then would do. And he's literally just standing there, just staring and doing the Iron Age Wade thing. But in a youth crew band, it was like the most jarring thing I had ever seen. And then after the show, he came up to me and he's like, I want to give you my band's demo. And I'm like, oh yeah, no, Desperate Measures. You guys have records and stuff. And he's like, no, fuck this. No, I got a real band. It's called Dropout. And gave me the Dropout demo.
That's funny. Yeah, I still have that tape, man.
Same. It's incredible how much, like, it's funny because Dropout was like a serious band to him.
Yeah.
Like, it could have been Dropout that the focus went to instead of Iron Age, and music would be so different now because of it.
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective to think about because it's true. Yeah, he loved that band, dude.
He loved it so much, and it was so, I don't know, like, were the shows nuts for Dropout?
I only remember one Dropout show, and it happened like at 1 or 2 in the morning, and it was crazy because it was 1 or 2 in the morning, but I can't really differentiate, that's I only remember one though. I'm sure there is a few.
I could imagine they're like, even the LP, the artwork for the LP is fucking crazy.
Yeah, man. Fucking yeah, I do. I remember Wade would I moved to Austin to go to culinary school. And Wade would pick me up from culinary school, and I would trade him whatever I made that day for a ride back to the city because it was way north, which is, about 15 minutes from the city. So he would scoop me up. I trade him food. We'd go kick it at the practice space or go kick it at the apartment and just blasting like ox blood or just some random oi, he was still shaving his head back then. It's funny to think about everybody so young.
All you guys were so tight too. Like, that was the thing that really struck me when I went down there, is like, it was like a really small scene. Like, it felt like when we first started going down there at that point, like, it was a big scene because there was like a lot of bands, and it was cool, and certainly, but like, it felt like everyone kind of knew everybody.
Yeah, man, people were really, really good friends. And everyone hung out a lot outside of shows. And yeah, it was a really tight-knit community. And I feel like not even until I moved to Austin did I really get that feeling of that kind of community with music. San Antonio had a scene that was close, but it wasn't like that. It wasn't like meeting people's parents and knowing people's parents and siblings and really feeling like, this is my friend,
Yeah, and like, I guess there's World Burns to Death and Marked Men, and there's like Marked Men's Austin, right? Yeah, like the
No, I think they were from
no, it's
they were from
Denton.
Denton, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Denton. But like,
They were just in Austin all the time.
yeah, but like with Iron Age, it felt like that was the band that everybody like got behind. Like, prior to that, it felt like there was like sort of a, I don't know, like, and I'm an outsider coming in, like, just looking at it a little bit, but it felt like it was a little more segmented off, like the straight edge scene versus like the sort of quote unquote crustier scene. And then that was like the bridge band.
Yeah, it was the band that drew everybody. Everybody would go see them. I don't feel like you're terribly wrong about that, about the separation. But yeah, they were the first band that got put on different kinds of bills, and that their fans would follow them to the different kinds of bills. And it was always very noticeable. I remember especially, after the first LP came out, it was more obvious that, okay, their fans are following them to the different shows they're going to. They got like legit fan base.
Yeah, Constant Struggle was like, I don't know, it's such an incredible album, but like that moment was like a really cool moment to kind of witness.
Yeah, man. I remember seeing them at their first show and being blown away because I hadn't heard it yet. I heard rumors like, okay, Tarpey got a new band, it's supposed to be heavier, it's supposed to be different, and then hearing it, and they stopped playing this song pretty early on, but I don't know if you remember the song Fork Tongue from the demo.
Oh yeah, I do kind of remember that. I haven't thought about that since then.
But I remember hearing that song and just thinking, this is the coolest shit I've ever heard. I want to say I was 18. They played this show. It was a huge lineup. It was like three different tours met up in San Antonio, and they kind of turned it into this fest. And it was like Desperate Measures, Righteous Gems, Mental, R&R, The Warriors. It just a whole mix of all kinds of hardcore at the time. Yeah, it was Iron Age's first show. Styx's War played. It was a pretty wild show.
Yeah, some of those Iron Age shows are some of the craziest shows I've ever seen. I remember being at that show in Houston at what was that place called? Like Earl's Roadhouse or
Walters?
Walters. Yeah, Walters. And there was like so many people were sipping lean. I thought that was also like it was funny because like I had become wise to that obviously through like 3-6 Mafia and DJ Screw stuff and you know like that stuff, but like then getting down there and being like, oh shit, this is not a joke. Like even in hardcore, there was people doing it like crazy.
Oh yeah, it's a real cultural aspect of Texas, especially back then when it wasn't as big or as widely known. It was definitely a part of multiple scenes.
Yeah, and there was like a brawl that broke out because someone's got their cup spilt, and it was like an insane fight in the middle of Houston.
Remember that.
Was always like some of the most insane situations. Actually, you and me have been in some of the most insane situations I've ever been in my life. Like that crazy dispensary that was in the back of a clothing store one time in LA that we
Oh,
went to.
Mr. Nice Guy.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah, it was called Mr. Nice Guy.
I don't think I've ever been as fucked up as I was that
Yeah,
night.
that was my first experience with a real front. Like you walk in and this is a rug store, and then you walk through a giant rug and it just becomes an underground dispensary. You could also buy iPads that just fell off the truck. You know, so
Yeah.
that place is cool.
It was so, I feel like. I think we're jumping way ahead now, but like I feel like that moment that we kind of came through in cannabis, and it's probably going to happen in other places as legalization kind of gets closer, but was like the Wild West of weed
Oh
in
yeah.
California and in Vancouver, like stuff that could just never happen. Like at one point in Vancouver, there were 260 illegal dispensaries, and all of them had dab bars.
Yeah, the dab bar was a wild concept. I went to some parties in LA when I lived there that it was open bar, but open dab bar. So you would go and they would have bartenders, they would have 50 bongs in the back, all clean. They bring one up, show you, they clean it, re-clean it for you, put fresh water, you take a few dabs, then you leave. They take the bong to the back, someone starts cleaning it, and it's a bar for dabs. And just everyone's like, the whole show's slow and behind, whatever the fuck it is. You know, it's a crazy that it was it really was the Wild West, man.
Even in Toronto, it got nuts just before legalization happened. But they would have these parties and they would have the same sort of thing like dab bars set up. And I brought a bunch of Vice reporters with me, like younger, like early people in their early 20s, back when I was in my like mid 30s or whatever. and they all did dabs. It got so fucked up. They all had to go home one by one because it was, yeah, like it's funny how like now that legalization's here, like that stuff's just completely gone. But I guess it's like the roaring 20s with booze.
Yeah, they would let you go into a place, take multiple dabs, and then just leave and drive, which is just a wild concept to me. So
Yeah.
many places, dude, there was places where you could go in there, you can buy fresh nug, get it turned into rosin, do dabs there, and then leave all within 30 minutes.
Thing that's really happened in cannabis is almost this like race to the bottom where the prices have dropped out for a lot of stuff. And
Dude, everywhere, man. The game's fucked up right now.
yeah, it's changed completely. And it's wild how different it is from, 20, 30 years ago,
Man,
or even 10.
even yeah, dude, even five. You know, I mean,
Yeah.
I remember when I first moved to California to get in the industry, you could still sell pounds of weed in Texas for $4,000.
Yeah. Crazy.
And you could make more if you broke it down.
Yeah.
Like if you broke it down to Qs, you're talking about 1,200 a Q. Like it was just candy from a baby, and then progressively just little. And now everybody has a plug. Everybody's willing to take a risk to receive something. Every state surrounding every before California has stuff for cheaper. It's an interesting time for and now with so many states doing it, it's just going to be a matter of time before it's not going to be an actual it's going to be a extremely commercialized business like anything else. And you already see the beginning of that in California.
Yeah, up here it's interesting how it's kind of broken out because there's like straight up illegal dispensaries still operating, and it's really hard to bust them now because what they're ultimately doing is just, avoiding taxes or licensing fees. So it's all bylaw misdemeanor kind of crimes. So they can't really shut these businesses down. So it's dropped the price to like, saw a store yesterday advertising $40 ounces.
Jesus.
Yeah. And it's been a race to the bottom in terms of quality, but at the same time, most people want pens. And it's interesting. I've also kind of like thought about it. It sort of eliminated a decent paying job for a huge segment of the population that didn't necessarily have university education or access to a family business, but like it was a way for people to earn high five figures to like low six figures, mid six figures, without getting into like too big of a scale or other types of businesses. Like it was like you could just be a weed person and that could be your job. But I don't know how many people can still afford to do that now.
Yeah, a lot of people that I knew that were, generational growers found ways to get out. They saw the red flags early on. And even my mentor that I lived with for a while, he started a business where he dries stuff for people because that was always his strong suit. He got in the centerfold of High Times. That's how good him and his team were. But they're What always set them apart was their method for drying and how thorough it was. And he started a business for that and then got out because he knew that, it's like the gold rush, man. You're gonna make money selling shovels, not trying to find gold.
Yeah. And also you can't grow gold. You can just grow this ultimately. Like I had dinner with this guy who is a very rich person the other week, and we were talking about the cannabis industry, and he's like, yeah, it sucks. You can't make any money out of it. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of amazing that way that it's just a plant now. So ultimately it's as cheap as growing any plant is for people too. So I know there's good and bad to it, ultimately. But back to Texas, when did you meet like Riley and the Power Trip guys?
When I was 17 or 18, I think I was 18. I hopped in the van with Bitter End. They were heading up to Oklahoma. to play a show in Tulsa. So I hopped in the van with them. We stopped in Dallas to play a show. We're at the party house in Denton at the time. And I knew who Riley was from his band at the time. They had never played San Antonio prior to that, so I never met him, but I knew who he was. They had a message board for Texas Hardcore at the time, so a lot of us knew each other from that. I got up there, met Riley, hit it off with everyone from the area, everyone from the Dallas hardcore scene that Riley was friends with. That was my first time meeting everybody. And then we hopped in the van together, went up to Oklahoma with Bitter End, and that's how me and Riley became close friends. From that day on, we just, talked about books, philosophy. But yeah, that was the beginning of our friendship. There's a picture that I have where both of us passed out in the van, just like little babies, man.
Did you go on those early Iron Age tours at all, or?
I went with them the first time that went to the East Coast.
Because I think I met you the first time in New Orleans with them, but
Yeah,
maybe.
I went out for that, and I went out to the East Coast, and I think I went out with them west once.
Did you make it up to Toronto with them? Did I meet you up here first, maybe?
I don't think I went. No, I didn't because I didn't have a passport that early on.
Okay. Yeah, that show in New Orleans, I remember you guys rolling up, and I used to say it was like that scene in Up in Smoke when Cheech and Chong get pulled over and they're trying to take all the drugs as soon as possible. But it was just, there were no cops involved. It was just people trying to take all the drugs as quickly as possible.
That's how that trip started as well. I remember when they pulled up to my apartment to pick me up, there was already multiple beer cans on the floor. And I was like, dude, it's like 8 in the morning. This is gonna be a wild one.
Yeah, that night it was like a combination of you guys and then Matt, that dude Matt Muscles
Oh yeah.
was also in attendance, and Wade and Matt Muscles together was always like a combustible combo.
Like I was intense.
Intense. Yeah. I just like all I remember that night is also fucking up my back. And obviously, rest in peace with Wade and Riley. I'm not talking shit, and I think they would love that we're telling these stories, but asking Wade for a pill, and then Wade giving me a pill, and then the next thing I know, because I hurt my back, and I'm like, I need a painkiller, and he's like, I got you. And then next thing I know, I'm buck naked on the toilet in our hotel room, listening to Pink Floyd, Piper at the Gates of Dawn, as Josh from Fucked Up is yelling at me, Damien, Damien. I'm like, oh, what happened? It was a weekend.
Oh yeah, man. I remember dropping some acid at a strip club and then kind of blacking out and then reawakening inside this place called Big Daddy's House of Sexual Acts that was just a stage that had a bed with two people fucking on it, and I was like, why am I here right now? And the walls were just 70s porn, like wallpaper, like wheat pasted to the wall. And I was like, yo, this is dark. And then I walk outside and it's just Bourbon Street. I'm like, dude, this is the heart of the city. This is insane.
Yeah, New Orleans is like one of those places that you just scratch the surface a little, and it's like the craziest shit you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah, I remember smoking weed with two random Jamaicans that same night, just walking around. It was a fucking crazy ass. That was a really wild trip.
It's interesting, like how sonically cities are. Like Dax from that band Acid Bath was on the podcast, and we were talking about New Orleans and like kind of the heaviness of like I Hate God and Acid Bath, who aren't from New Orleans but kind of get lumped in with that, and like all that stuff versus the stuff that comes out of Austin, which always has like this weird psychedelic bend. But I guess it's because Austin has like such a history, and he was saying because Austin has such a history of LSD and like Rocky Erickson and stuff. But like, yeah, you go to New Orleans and it's like a hard, dark party so quick, I found.
Dude, I remember being in New Orleans once wearing I Hate God long sleeve and just walking down the street normal, and some fool on sitting down was like, smoked crack with that bass player the other day, and I was just like, sick. Like, I'm not doubting you in any way.
Like getting down to Austin during that South by Southwest period. It feels like also it kind of coincided with like the return of cocaine to the music industry in a big way. But those Austin's South by Southwest parties and weekends became so nuts. And it was such a weird mixing of worlds.
Oh yeah, dude, I remember one time, because I dabbled in a little bit of drug dealing for 10 or 15 years, so
I didn't want to know if you want to get into that.
I'm not afraid of who I was. No, I don't mind talking about it, man. It's not who I am anymore, and it definitely is part of how I got to this point. But yeah, I just remember one night during South by Southwest, it's starts off like any other night would. Bouncing around shows, and next thing you know, hanging out with Justin Long talking about how much I love Jeepers Creepers, the movie. And he just looks fucking pissed that that's the one movie I'm referencing him from. And he's just talking about how much he loves the city, how he's gonna move here. And Iron Age had just played, and he's like, this band's like the modern Metallica. And he just kept saying that over and over. And it was fucking a wild time, man.
It was a weird mixing of worlds. Like there was like especially because like at that point, yeah, people like Justin Long and these celebrities wanted to be cool, like wanted to be around the Vice stuff or wanted to be around just like the party. So you would have like I feel like that's where like I well that's where like Trash Talk and like Odd Future made the connection with each other, right? Like.
Frank Ocean coming to an Iron Age show.
Yeah, Frank Ocean moshing at the Iron Age show, which I feel like that's the city where that could kind of happen. Like you could have Paris Hilton at a Trash Talk show or something, like, and it would somehow make sense because, yeah, why wouldn't they be? Like, why wouldn't she be here in Austin?
I don't remember which bridge show it was. It might have been the Iron Age bridge show one year for Chaos. But Bill, no, it was South by Southwest, but Bill Murray was just hanging out on the bridge, just walking around talking to people. And everyone was like, what is that fucking Bill Murray? And just hanging out. I remember being next to Riley. He was like, I'm gonna go try to talk to Bill Murray.
Yeah, there was that year at South by Southwest. He was like around everywhere. Like he was like, jumped behind the bar at Red 7 and like showed up at a house party that Wade took us to the next like on the Sunday night. And yeah, it's like so many weird, awkward hangs with like I was talking to my brother today about the first time I met the guys from Turbo Negro, and I'm like, oh yeah, we beefed with each other. Yeah, we like ended up like just beefing with each other outside of like some show at South by Southwest. Like it felt like every time you went out during that thing, there'd be like a weird confluence of people or like some weird altercation with like some band or something like that.
I remember that was the first time I saw you guys. It was Fucked Up and Turbo Negro for free at some park. And I remember right before that, I just saw Torched and then the Marked Men. And then I went to that show. And yeah, I remember you were bleeding and you grabbed my shirt and you wiped your head with it. And it made this dollar sign like on the shirt. And then I just wrote Fucked Up on it and just wore that as like a custom shirt for, dude, 3 or 4 years. Easy.
I totally remember. Yeah, I remember meeting you at that show and doing that to you. Like, and there was like a photo of it too, because it was like a Vice party, Vice Saves Texas, I think it was called. And that was also Jay Reitard played his second show ever, like solo show at that, like inside the club right after. I remember going in there and watching there, and like Stephen McDonald from Red Cross was there. It was like,
Oh, that's sick.
yeah, it was like such a cool weekend. That whole thing was just like so nuts. Remember like going to see UGK play
I
at
do.
that parking lot or something?
Yeah, they played at this, it was, I want to say it was called like maybe the North Door or something. It was like somewhere really small. I do remember that though. That was also the same year I saw Dinosaur Jr. In a tent to like maybe 100 people. That was a good year, man.
Yeah, that was like it. I South by Southwest was fucking awesome back then. Like the shows were really good. There was like, it was kind of shitty, but there was always like free energy drinks, so you could just stay awake the whole time and find, free barbecue or free food everywhere you went. Like it
Yeah,
was.
I remember being on edibles one year, and they had free ice cream, and me and a friend were just taking a bite and then just throwing it on the floor because as they were all free, and the guy was like, "Dude, what the fuck are y'all doing? We're just you fucking blades, just fucking being wasteful."
I remember also, a lot of member berries on this episode, but like the time that you guys gave Sandy Scooby snacks from
Oh
fucking,
yeah, I
and
remember that.
she could see, like, I've never seen anybody that high in my life to this day as she was
Yeah,
that day.
I remember giving her one, and then I walked off and came back hours later, and she was just still sitting in the same place. And I was like, "Fuck."
She was so stoned.
Yeah, man, I used to make them pretty strong.
Yeah, they were. You also had to this day two of the craziest cannabis consumption devices I've ever seen. One was the weird balloon thing that for blunts that made you take like a whole blunt in one insane hit.
The Smosh-boggler. I got that in Canada.
Well, that's the thing, right? You said you got it at like Cannabis Culture at West.
Yeah, I got it in Vancouver. Before he got canceled, it was at Mark Emery's spot.
Yeah. This
He had
the
just
place is still there, but like he's no longer allowed in the building.
Yeah, it was he was working when I went there. He's the one who sold it to me. Apparently, somebody there invented it. And it was one of a few prototypes that never went anywhere.
Because years later, when I met him and I was interviewing him for those Vice documentaries that I was doing, I brought it up to him and he didn't. He had a vague recollection of it once I brought it up to him, but they had never seen any of them ever since. Kind of that prototype that you purchased.
Dude, it was one of the coolest things I ever had.
It was crazy. It was exact. It was like a super machine. Like it was or what does Bill Stevenson call them? A blowy.
It was technology
It was
for sure.
technology. And then the other one was the light bulb vaporizer.
Oh, yeah, that one is from Germany.
That was crazy. It was like just gave you like the top terpenes. Like you must have been getting like just like the just the most volatile terps.
I don't remember the name of that one. It was fun. I remember it was a German company, and it was actually part of you can get it if you have insurance in Germany because you're supposed to use it for actual herbs. So it's a medical device in Germany, but it's black light. It's a black light that gets brighter or it gets stronger as you inhale. So when you're not inhaling, it's dormant, and then as you start hitting it, the UV light goes off, so it's almost like when you use like a magnifying glass to do a bowl. Have you ever done that?
Okay, yeah, with the
It, it, it's
sunlight.
ex yeah, it's ex it tastes exactly the same, just super clean.
Yeah, I remember it was like a crazy clean taste.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
Yeah, those are to this day two of the most unique ways I've ever consumed cannabis.
Man, I wish I still had. I don't know what happened to that machine.
Yeah, I think you said it broke at one point.
Yeah, probably broke. It was too expensive to fix. I remember it itself was an insane purchase, but back then, you had to do
Yeah.
it.
You also, and then when you moved out to LA, you guys had that house, which I don't think anyone lives at anymore, right? Like I think
The stoop.
the Stoop House.
No, I think like friends of friends live there now,
Oh, that's
but.
cool.
Yeah, but not the crew that you met when you went out there.
No, there was a crazy crew of people that came through that house.
Yeah, there's a lot of creative people doing a lot of things for the culture in LA.
Yeah.
But I think Vice actually did an article about the house.
Really? Oh, I gotta
Think
read that.
so. Somebody, if it wasn't Vice, it was another like cultural magazine.
I did like a an episode of a TV show thing that we shot there. And that guy, what was his name? I think he used to be called Spooky Black. He was like an R&B singer.
Oh yeah.
He just like rolled up to the house midway
That's
through the interview.
Corbin, I
Corbin,
think
that was his
it,
name. Yeah. It was like a real creative hub. Like a really cool time in LA too, like the stuff that was coming out of there. And I guess Justice had moved there too from.
yeah. I remember when Justice moved in. He moved in upstairs with Lee.
Yeah, like he moved into like did he take Lee's room or no, he just moved into
No, he
the.
just moved in. There was a room upstairs.
Yeah. And you had that house off to the side.
Yeah, this, oh, we call it the sites too.
Besides too. That was a fun house. There was some like wild shit that went down there.
Yeah, dude, there's a lot of myth. I was actually just talking to one of my good friends about the situation that happened where he rolled up there with, I don't know if we're gonna have to bleep this part out. I know we can edit this, but he rolled up there with a quarter mil trying to do some purchases, left it with me. It's like, oh yeah, man, you're good. You had to go run some errands. I'm just kicking it with the homies, so it's in my room. Everything's cool. I'm in the backyard barbecuing. He walks in, doesn't recognize anyone because it's his first time in LA. He thinks I set him up or something. He starts freaking out. Can't find me because I'm fucking cooking in the back. And he's like, yo, is everything good? I'm like, yeah, you're good, fool. We're kicking it. I'm like, these are the homies. And I was just, he told me, he was like, man, I was scared, man. I was like, couldn't breathe. I was like, oh yeah, bro. I would fucking, if I couldn't find the person I trusted either, I would fucking be losing my mind. But that house had a lot of wild times, man.
Yeah, I remember one time my bag being locked. I was at your house, passed out on the couch, and then my bag was locked in the main house and waiting for someone to come and let get my bag out of the house so I could get to the airport on time. And then they got into a huge brawl on the way back to the house, so I nearly missed my flight because they were street fighting. I couldn't get my bag.
Yeah, we had some, dude, there were some wild ass times there. There's always beef with just random people on the street, just wanting to fight people. And man, the outside homies out there are aggressive.
Especially that part of LA at that time too.
Yeah, man, that was a very fun time. I remember we used to trip a lot and just be on the stoop and just watch the world unfold hour by hour. And man, I used to, that was the time that I started getting really obsessed with stand-up too and really grinding. And I was around so many creative people that it made it easy. You know, every day someone is working on something creative. So you almost felt like you had to keep up because it was just the atmosphere that you were in. And I really contribute those years to my development for working hard for like entertainment purposes.
Yeah, like you look at what people did that came out of that, like, and what they're doing now, you know, like yourself doing stuff in stand up, Justice doing his stuff in music. Fuck, Lee's doing fashion brands and like,
Working with the biggest fashion brands,
it's crazy. And it's
it's
just
so
like
great.
everyone out of that house was, yeah, doing something. Everyone was like, that was the cool thing. It was like, even though people were obviously partying and getting super fucked up in some cases, everybody for the most part was also kind of grinding to, like you're saying, building like something or like ran a company or ran some sort of other thing.
Yeah. It was a hub for creativity, and people partied as hard as they created.
I remember coming there one time and everyone's like smoking blunts. And then all of a sudden, Krayshawn showed up with the baby. And it was just like
That's
Krayshawn with a baby there at the party, too.
funny. Yeah, that's
No
what.
one, everyone stopped smoking blunts at that point.
Yeah, I actually remember that. Yeah, there would always be random fucking celebrities pop up there, like actual celebrities. You'd just be
Yeah.
like, all right, man, you're just kicking in the hood right now. That's tight.
Yeah. LA's also like a weird city where that kind of seems to be able to happen.
Yeah,
Where like
definitely.
there's all of a sudden, And once I think drugs is probably a large factor in the social mingling that happens.
Yeah, for sure.
But it leads to some hilarious oddball situations of people like being together that you're like, how did this person wind up here? So, California, though, with the cannabis stuff, at some point you left that industry, right? You were like,
Yeah, I did it for 15 years. I worked for, he's my mentor in life, is a like a father figure to me. He was a really dedicated grower. And like I mentioned previously, he was in Centerfold of High Times. He knew all the people that were actually creating strains. He was deep in the industry, and I worked for him managing his trim team and working his rooms. And at a certain point, man, I was going back and forth from the Bay to LA vending, because back then you could still make a lot. There, LA wasn't what it was with the amount of people growing in the actual city, because it was still such a cowboy scene. Not that many people were growing in the city, and a lot of factories that were getting popped left and right. So I was coming down from the Bay and vending, but I was doing it so often, and I couldn't really focus on stand up like I wanted to. And when I would go down, it'd be for 4 or 5 days, 4 or 5 days. So I just made the decision to move there. And I was still in the industry back and forth for a little bit. And then I would say 2020 is when I left the industry. I remember finishing up a grow right when COVID was starting to hit the news. And I was still living in LA. I went home to visit, and I haven't came back since.
yeah, because like I guess like the grinding that you did in comedy, it's been awesome to kind of watch you do it because I've really watched you like build it from the ground up.
Yeah, man, I remember I had dabbled in it here and there when I was living in Austin, but never consistently. Once a month, twice a month, for probably about a year before I moved to California. Now, when I got to California, it was the same thing. I was living in the middle of the woods, so it was hard to get somewhere where I could actually get to a mic or practice. So it would be, maybe even once a quarter, I would go and do a mic, just enough to tell myself I was still doing it. And when I made the decision to move to LA, I remember hanging out one day with Tim Butcher, and we were just talking about comedy, and I was like, yeah, I think I'm just gonna start doing it every day. So I started doing it more and more. And then one of my good friends from Texas that I started doing stand-up with, he moved to LA to take it more seriously. He crashed on the couch for a few months. So we're just every day, 6, 7 days a week, man, no exaggeration, just 4 or 5 mics a night sometimes, just really trying to hone our craft. So doing that for years and years and years. Then when I moved, it made me realize that I was like living in a bubble in the best way, where it's such a fierce competition and everyone's such great writers and great performers there, that it forces you to really put effort in. So when you step out of that bubble into different scenes, you realize like, okay, I've been hyper. Like, how in LA everything moves a little faster? I always try to explain this to friends, that time is different in LA because the city is so busy and everything takes so long. Every experience you have has to be a hyper experience. So that's why people party, they party super hard. When they relax, everything is to the extreme because time is so different there. So I felt like when I stepped out of that, I realized like, oh, it's been X amount of years, but to the rest of the world, it's double that because of how fast that city is. And I'm able to do 3 to 5 mics a night, where some places you might not even be able to do 3 in a week because of how the city is. So I really felt like I don't think I would have advanced as fast in developing the craft if I didn't live in LA.
Yeah, LA's like, well, it's like it is the reason it is what it is because of that, I guess. Like the fact that everyone's there, it's hyper focused in terms of like intensity and pressure. But I find that city can also eat people alive because of that too. Because
Yeah,
like
definitely, man.
you can always party.
Yeah, dude, you're fucking, you know, you start off at the cha-cha on a regular Tuesday. Next thing you know, you're fucking doing Molly, dancing with Andy Dick at the after hours, going into Wednesday morning. You know what I mean? It happens, bro.
I think that probably literally happened, I imagine.
Yeah, man, more than once, you know?
Yeah, like I guess that's the tragic thing, like talking about all this partying. And like you said, you kind of got out of it at the right time, but like we got a lot of friends that definitely didn't, you know. Rest
Yeah,
in
man.
peace, BC. Rest in peace, Tim Butcher. Rest in peace, Riley. Rest in peace, Wade. Like, and more than I'm probably forgetting right now, because it's just like, and it feels like it was just this sort of like, I don't know. I don't want to like get too into this, I guess, because like it's like a heavy thing to fucking talk about, obviously. And it's just, but it's just really sad when you think about like all these people were kind of like together and friends.
Oh yeah, man. There was this one night where we're hanging out on the stoop. We're partying. Everyone's tripping. It's winter, and Tim Butcher at the time, he was kind of in between bands, and he was doing some stuff. He was doing that Hell in a Cell that he started with Eddie, the wrestling themed band. They had a song about the stoop, but I remember one night he was just like, "Hey man, you make me a promise." And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Don't ever stop doing stand up, man. You don't even realize how funny you are." And I was like, "All right, man." I kind of just like blew it off. He's like, "No, I'm saying you got really serious." He's like, "Never stop doing stand up, man." And I was like, "All right." And he just went on this huge rant about why I need to stop fucking around and start taking it seriously. And then, you know, not too long after that, he passed, and I was like, man, that was like, I don't, when I look back at it in a retrospect, sometimes I feel like it was not a warning, but he was like a goodbye almost, you know? And it was really, I think about that. It's hard not to think about him and Riley before I perform. And because Riley would be the person that I would send everything to, because Riley was one of the smartest people I knew. So I would hit, "Hey man, what do you think about this? What do you think about this?" Because I'm up at 3 or 4 in the morning because I don't sleep, and he's up at 3 or 4 in the morning because he don't sleep. So we're, you know, constantly just fucking around, sending each other jokes. And there'd be days where I feel like if I don't take the time to meditate and think about them before I perform, then that's when it'll actually affect it. You know what I mean? Because I can't deny that they're not a part of my creative process. They were always there from the very beginning, both of them, you know? Wade too,
Yeah.
man. Wade was the first person to ever come see me do a show that was my friend in a
Yeah.
suit from court.
I got a lot of regret around Riley's past. Like, I got a lot of regret around all their passings, obviously, but Riley in particular, because I feel like I forgot that Riley was still Riley. Like, as this thing was blowing up around him, I let myself kind of get caught up in it and then didn't. I don't know. I don't think I reached out enough, and like, not that I would have changed anything. I mean, but like, I just feel like I got a lot of regret around, you know, not keeping better in touch with Riley after everything started exploding for him.
He came down to San Antonio that July before and hung out for a few days, and I just, you know, took him around to eat, let him sleep and relax. But yeah, man, I have the same feeling, and I saw him almost right before. You know, I think it's natural to have that.
Yeah. I'm doing the podcast, like talking to people, especially people that like went through shit, like once they got like once fame kind of hit, like people, like in particular people like from kind of like a punk rock background, where I think there is like a weird guilt around it, and like a resentment certainly around it from other people. I've learned to like fuck with people a lot more than I thought. And like, yeah, Riley, it got crazy for Riley. And like, you know, you were closer to him at that point and saw it, but like, yeah, it would have been a real like mind fuck to go through that.
Oh yeah, dude. He was, I mean, we saw it happen in real time, and him become starting to take the first steps of becoming celebrity, like act like the true to what people would call a celebrity. You know, it was interesting to see, man. And
Yes.
I definitely, and I don't think you're wrong. I think it had its toll on him, you know, in multiple ways.
Yeah, like, and I think, I don't know, I feel like also a lot of guilt around BC and Chris's passing too, because I feel like that was something that happened in slow motion too. And like, I think all of us at one point or another were probably had words with them about like, dude, you know, like, but it was always kind of like a joke a little
Yeah.
bit. And only when people are gone do you realize, oh shit. Like, I just started reaching out to people I don't even really know well, but like people I'll see kind of like doing shit on social media. I'll just like straight up call or write to people that I'm like kind of know and be like, yo, please don't, because I've seen how this ends. And it like
Yeah.
it really is fucking sad. And I think I've scared like the shit out of some of these younger people and parents that have been on this podcast, been like, I barely know you, and now you're telling me like what I should and shouldn't do with my life, but I can't not do it because like I've seen how it plays out.
Yeah, no, man, and it's the same in that same light. It's not things that weren't told to us. We just ignored it. You know what I mean? And I think that's what hits hard too, is like, 'cause I do the same thing, man, with people and people in my life, and especially like younger people that I meet. I'm like, yo, man, just slow down, you know? And people really take offense to just those two words, could really, you know, invoke emotion in someone. But like you said, man, I've seen it play out the same over and over again, and no one has figured out how to beat it. And you're not going to be the one.
Yeah, that's like the one thing I've been trying to like instill in my kids the whole way through. And they knew Riley. Like they knew people, like these people, like they met him and they saw like the sadness that kind of happens after these people are gone. So but just trying to instill in them, like, I don't know, there's certain paths that just don't end well. And
Yeah.
yeah, that it's not weed paths and stuff, and like that's there's like as much as there are all drugs, and not judging anybody who does any drugs, but there are good drugs and bad drugs, like
For sure.
we know that, like we've seen it firsthand
Yeah.
too. Yeah, I don't know. I wish weed was a lot more prevalent, a lot more accessible for people too at different times.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'll still hear, you know, because hardcore is bigger than ever now. And I'm in the food industry, which has always been a big attraction for rockers. So I'll hear kids listen to Power Trip or talk about seeing Power Trip. And I never bring up that I knew Riley. I just want to hear, it's interesting to hear kids talk to him or talk about him in such high regard. Like he's a rock star to them. And it always makes me smile. And it never makes, I mean, it obviously makes me sad, but it makes me smile more because even at the funeral, I said, you know, I remember being a kid and listening to records and telling myself, man, I wish I was alive to see this band. And you should feel good knowing that 20, 30 years from now, there's going to be kids saying that about Power Trip. And that's something, every time I hear kids talk about him, I smile because that's what I think about. I think about like, man, these kids had no idea who he was. This is their depiction of him through this music, but it's beautiful because he's still here in conversation and listening. And I don't know, man, it's interesting when you see the influence people have on other people.
Yeah, I feel like the one thing is he's so much more complicated than just like, not complicated, I mean like deep and amazing than just the music could convey, like his love of, like you're saying, philosophy and comic books and just like the way he cared about friends. And like I feel like that's the thing about Riley, that like it was weird to watch the deification of a friend who you knew like as a complex individual. And like you're saying, like you hear about how people, know him through the music or know him through seeing him in the context of being the band, but you're like, oh wow, but the person, it's like, and I don't mean to like diminish either of these people's passing by trying to compare them, but I guess it's like knowing Kurt Cobain after him passing away and being like, well, no, he wasn't just this morose dude. Like, he was a really funny guy who loved this thing and loved that. It's like, he wasn't just the music. He was like this complex person. And I find it like you're saying, I'm really happy that that his legend lives on, but it's also weird to let go of the person and let them become sort of the legend. I don't know if I'm being selfish in even saying that.
Yeah, no, I remember the second fest they did the second year, and we all split a mansion, and me and him split we split the master bedroom. It was like me, him, it was the dudes from Mil Spec, Greg Lockinat was there. It was like the crew. And I just remember like being there, and it was a weird feeling because it was something that we've done 100 times, and like sharing a room, like we've done it since we were kids, traveling around and being on tour. But at this, I remember that specific weekend just being like, man, this is, even I felt like, this dude is on a whole nother level right now. You could just feel it. You know what I mean? And I've never had that experience before with someone. Like, I have friends that have gained popularity through different forms of entertainment or different ventures. But this is, like I said, this is someone who was like, you could see that he was taking the steps to go to a level that, I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I remember seeing him meeting up with them at a, they were opening for some band in Toronto, like a metal band. It was like some huge show, and all these metalhead kids coming running up to him afterwards and just like looking at the way he was engaging with them and just being like, wow, like not like in a bad way, but like something's changed. Like you're saying, there's like a different sort of way of, it's not like he's hardcore Riley anymore. Now he's Riley, the guy, the metal rock guy, not as a person, but like to these people, which, yeah, I don't know. I always thought of him as Riley, the hardcore punk guy, or the hard, like the punk rock kid, who, yeah, like would always want to talk about like would always put up with me talking about the nerdiest shit, like imaginable, like me talking, telling about really Red Records or something.
Yeah, man, he loved conversation, dude. That's why it was always genuine conversation. He didn't mind listening because he just loved learning about anything.
What was his pre-Power Trip band called again?
The Balls Out Gang.
The Balls Out Gang.
Yeah.
I think that's the one James K sent me one after Riley passed away. And he's like, yeah, this is his band where he tried to sound like you. And it was so weird because I'd never heard Riley do like a punk like vocal like that before. And it was, I'm trying to remember what band that was. Maybe it was Balls Out Gang.
Maybe I can't really remember what exactly what they sounded like, but I think that might have been more like a youth crew thing. Maybe.
Okay. This was maybe after that then. It was like a punk kind of I don't know, like 82 style
Oh,
punk rock band.
that's funny.
Yeah. It was wild to watch what happened with Power Trip. And then of course, like that fucking shithead Greg Gutfeld reaching out and like being like, don't let him in. Don't fucking let him in. I made that mistake. Don't do it. And Riley was just like too sweet of a human being not to see that this guy was a shithead. And then like after Riley passed, anyway, I don't want to get into all the messy stuff, but fuck. I got regret about that.
Yeah, man, it was also an interesting time, man.
What's the interview that you did where you're pretending to be in Power Trip or Iron Age as Prince Paul, I think?
All right, so this is how this happened. 85 from Baltimore?
Yes.
Okay. So 85, anybody that knows 85 knows that 85 gambles. He loves gambling.
He's a self-described degenerate gambler, and he's told that to strangers that I introduced him to.
He's the true definition of a degenerate gambler. I love him to death.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Trash Talk was, they had just got sponsored by Vans to do a commercial or do a video or something. So they had a huge budget video shoot going on in the middle of the desert. Fire, explosions, all kinds of silly shit. At that same weekend, Power Trip was supposed to play Scion Fest that used to happen in LA yearly, where the car company would sponsor few bands from different subcultures, and they would play this little fest together to promote the car because it was supposed to be targeted towards younger people. So Power Trip's playing the fest the same weekend this is happening. Me and Chase are on the stoop, we're blazing, and he was like, "Yo, you should hit up 85 and bet him that he won't fly here in 24 hours to hang out with us this weekend and go party in the desert." And I was like, "All right, cool. Hit him up. Yo, 85, bet you $500 you won't come to LA in 24 hours." Just hits me up a few minutes later. "You motherfucker, bah, I can only get there in 26 hours, the fastest I can get there." It's like, "All right, so just say that you can't win the bet. Just don't take the bet and just come tomorrow." Of course, he fucking takes the bet. He shows up in 26 hours, loses the bet. He knew that he was gonna lose. I don't know how he even wrote. He was like counting on some like layover, not, like being able to skip it, or just I don't know what the fuck he was thinking. So he shows up to LA. We're hanging out, and he goes, "Yo, on the way to the video shoot, let's just go to Vegas. I have some vouchers I need to cash in. We can just drive, I'll drive us there. I get a couple of free nights at the Caesars. Let's just go party in Vegas." So me, Hood, Riley, and Antoine hop into the van, and we head to start heading to Vegas. The whole time we're smoking DMT and taking acid. The whole time. We're just, everyone is hitting DMT. Me and Riley, Antoine, we're tripping on acid. 85's on acid. We get to Vegas. He checks into the hotel, does the whole thing, goes to get his money. We're hanging out in the hotel room. The next day, he starts getting phone calls. His phone starts going off super early on the West Coast because he's from fucking Baltimore. He accidentally checked in and put down the deposit with his company's card. So just a little more background. This motherfucker's grandpa invented the machine that tests aerodynamics. So
Didn't
he
know
has,
that.
yeah. So his family has contracts with the government, every college that has an aerodynamics program. And he has a whole metal, like, room where they do metal fabrication to build these fucking machines. He's responsible for very important things. He forgot to send in payroll, and he used the company card to check into the hotel. So he's getting bitched at by his company. He's freaking out, right? Me, I go play dice. I end up winning $800 shooting dice. I take me, Riley, and Hood to a $100 buffet. We're hanging out. We go back up to the top. 85, it's the night of a, there's a basketball game. It's like the NBA playoffs. I'm talking to Riley. It's like, "Yo, I'm gonna go place this bet. I'll be right back." 85, "What bet are you gonna make?" I tell him, "It's betting against Washington." He's like, "I'll take that bet." I'm like, "Yo, dude, you're already in trouble right now. You're already down. I don't have to do this. I'm gonna go bet a G. I don't want to." He's like, "I'll take that bet. You can take it on credit. If you lose, pay me in payments." It's like, "Yo, I don't want to take money from my friend." And just starts fucking calling me a pussy. And I was like, "All right, bro, I'll take your bet and I'll go make this bet." I end up hitting. So he's down even further now, right? In the hole. And he makes one of the craziest statements I ever heard, which is sometimes the only way to get out of a hole is to dig deeper. It's one of his favorite things to say. So me and Riley are hanging out at the pool, and he's like, "Oh, fuck, I forget I have this interview with the Scion people to promote the show last minute. We have to head back to LA and have to do this interview. So we start heading back. He's hitting up people from the band. Nobody wants to do the interview. Nobody wants to do it. No one's really into the Scion aspect of it, right? So Riley's like, fuck, I don't want to do this interview by myself. And I was like, oh, yo, I'll just pretend to be in the band. I'll do it with you. And we're both still tripping, is the thing. And if you watch the interview, you could definitely tell that we're both fucking tripping on acid. So I pull up and I was like, what do I say? He's like, man, just pretend to be Blake. Just be really arrogant. And I was like, all right, cool, I got you. So the whole time I'm just like, I'm tripping, trying not to laugh. That's why my face is just deadpan serious. Cause internally I'm like, don't laugh, don't laugh, don't laugh. Cause dude, I was tripping. And the interview is so much longer than it's edited down to. It was like a 45-minute interview. The whole time he's asking me very specific questions about my writing process and how I learned to play the guitar, everything I'm just making up on the spot about Blake. And then, yeah, eventually, when it's edited and it's released, and that they do the interview with me, and it says, Blake Ibanez from Power Trip, and then they show live footage, and it's Blake, and then they come back to me. That's like the funniest part of the interview because it's blatantly obvious that I'm not the person in the videos playing guitar.
You're like, I've had some work done.
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. And it was
They
Chris
said,
Paul, right?
yeah. And yeah, they ended up taking the interview down eventually when they found out that it was a big joke. But there's every now and then somebody will, I'll see a still of the picture floating around. It's like me and then with Blake's name under it.
That's so awesome. Were you on that tour, which was like Iron Age? Sexfid played some of the dates, and Cold World played a bunch of the dates.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay, that to me is like got to be one of the the most insane tours imaginable. Like,
I went with them to the East Coast once, and we did, like New York, that whole area, and that was wild too, man. That was a very a very wild time.
yeah, like you were saying, like I never got to, like obviously I'll never get to see the Beatles, certainly not at the Cavern, but seeing Iron Age inside Red 7 at one of those South by Southwests, I think I was like the greatest. And like it was Ribs era, but Ribs was like licking the bass, the neck of the bass as they were playing. And it was the sickest set I think I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I know this that you're talking about. That was a crazy one.
Yeah.
Hot too as fuck.
Do you remember the Hatebreed Monster Energy drink set at South by Southwest?
Yeah, definitely.
That's
That was
awesome.
a dude. That show was fucking wild, and everybody was really lit for Hatebreed for some reason. Like people were just partying all day from the crack of the morning. And yeah, that was that whole era, man, of South by Southwest partying was really crazy.
That was like dudes with grills punching each other in the face as hard as they could.
Yeah, everyone had grills at that era.
Yeah,
It
and
was pretty big.
it was so violent, that show. And Jamie was talking a lot about Monster Energy drink. I remember that too. Another key feature of it, but yeah, those are like those are the shows that I like look back upon and I'm like, yeah, like there's just no way I could ever top that. Those some of those weekends or some of those shows, like seeing the Melvins play and Motorhead play and
Oh
crazy stuff.
yeah, dude. Yeah, seeing Motorhead. I don't remember. I believe it might have been Stubbs, but
Stubbs, yeah.
it was just like I remember it was my first time seeing him. I was like, damn, this is. There's a few times in life where you have that feeling like this is the coolest thing I've ever experienced, and that was definitely one of those moments.
Yeah.
Just banger after banger after banger.
Yeah. They were like, I don't know, like, I feel like that was the apex of culture. Like, there was like free food.
Yeah, dude, I
Like,
saw Future in a tent, dude.
I saw Migos.
Yeah.
That year that all everyone's like, oh, you got to check out Migos, and it was only like Versace was like the only thing out, I think, at that point, like it had blown up,
yeah,
and everyone's just going nuts for it. Like, yeah, like there were just so many weird, you know, like hangs and weird, weird moments and stuff. Like, anyway, anytime you want to come back on this thing, man, and talk about more, Ronald, you're always welcome.
Yeah, man, anytime. There's a lot of stories to touch base on.
Yeah, like that's the thing. There's so many stories where I'm like, "Do we talk about that? Do we talk about that particular moment?" I think we exposed enough for the first,
for sure,
the first dabble.
I appreciate you having me on, man. Right?